Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Bay Area cities, San Francisco, San Jose, and Oakland, remain among the most expensive rental markets in the country. The median rent for a one-bedroom in San Francisco is about $3,400 a month, $2,200 in Oakland. This is according to data from the apartment rental site Zumper. Since 2011, evictions in San Francisco have increased by 60%, according to Stanford student and writer Sarab Datar. We have also seen eviction increases in Oakland and San Mateo. In fact, the Mercury News reported last month the number of no-cause evictions in San Mateo County rose 300% over a three-year period. On December 2nd, the urgency of the Bay Area housing crisis drew national and international attention after the Ghost Ship warehouse fire in Oakland killed 36 people. Covering the story for The Guardian, today's guest, Sam LaFave, wrote, "Underlying the tragedy is a secretive culture of art and music forced into increasingly vulnerable circumstances as housing costs soar." So what are the solutions to this crisis? Sam LaFave is a freelance journalist in Oakland who has written for The Guardian, The Wire, and The New York Times. He is also a regular contributor to the East Bay Express, and he joins us on the line from Oakland. Hi, Sam. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Rose. Thanks a lot for having me. Appreciate it.
It's great to have you. We're also joined by Greg Hanberg, Senior VP of Properties for ArtSpace, a national organization that works to develop affordable spaces for artists. Over the last 17 years, Greg has managed 30 projects across the country to create affordable and safe live-work spaces for artists. And he joins us on the line from Minneapolis. Hi, Greg. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. Glad to be here.
Great to have you. I wanted to start off with you, Sam. Talk a little bit about the urgency around affordable housing now. I mean, it's always been a crisis, but the Ghost Ship fire really added an urgency to all of this.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right to say that the crisis began long before the fire. And I really just think that, you know, in the wake of the fire, a lot of people who were close to the music community that, you know, was represented by the gig that night, you know, they were very keen to go, look, like, a lot of people had expressed concerns about this space in particular, and, you know, the fact that shows continued to happen there anyways kind of illustrates the lack of spaces available to people in the East Bay and the way they're forced to make kind of dangerous compromises. So it was really people close to the scene who kind of thrust the premium on space to kind of the fore of the conversation.
Right, and this got attention across the country. I wanted to introduce one more guest. Tom DeCaney is Director of Cultural Affairs at the San Francisco Arts Commission. And Tom, thank you for joining us. I know you're only available for a couple of minutes this morning, but you wanted to talk about what San Francisco is doing to create more affordable spaces. And, I mean, this has been such a problem in San Francisco. I reported on the first tech boom back in the late 90s, and it was difficult. But this time, it's much worse.
Yes. Hi, Rose. Thank you so much for having me and for certainly covering this really important issue. You're absolutely right. I mean, this is an ongoing policy challenge, and it's not just a challenge in San Francisco, but it's a challenge around the globe for major urban areas as globalization creates incredible affordability challenges, whether it's Hong Kong, London, New York, San Francisco, or Oakland. We are certainly needing to look at long-term solutions. As a city, Mayor Lee is put out a directive to the Arts Commission and to the Mayor's Office of Housing and Community Development and the Office of Community Investment and Infrastructure, which is the former redevelopment agency of the state, to make sure that we're looking to find pathways forward for affordable housing for artists in San Francisco. We're approaching it really from a multi-prong approach because we know that no one solution is going to be adequate to combating the very, very challenging real estate market we're in. But one solution that we're working toward is through some funding from the National Endowment for the Arts and matched by some local general fund dollars here from San Francisco, We're looking to work with a nonprofit partner in affordable housing to provide technical assistance support to individual artists so they can get their financial documents in order to qualify for public or affordable housing opportunities. So one of the challenges we see is that artists historically have not accessed the existing affordable housing pipeline because of the complex application process. So one of our goals is to help individual artists be able to navigate that process and to enter into the affordable housing lotteries that exist throughout San Francisco. We've seen great success in Chinatown and among other communities, but artists have kind of been left behind in accessing some of the opportunities over the years. So obviously housing's been a challenge in San Francisco for a long time, and there have been various successes in terms of building new housing, affordable housing, and helping individuals access that. We're also looking to identify...
And Tom, yes, since we just have a few minutes with you, I just wanted to ask you, people are really frustrated about what's going on. In fact, Chrissy Kiefer, who has run Dance Mission for, what is it, 20 years now? Maybe even more than that. I mean, her company provides so much to this city, and she's paying $12,000 a month in rent. And, you know, a lot of people are so frustrated because this city is swimming in money. I mean, so much money is flooding to the city. The mayor and others gave tech companies incentives to bring their businesses to San Francisco, to mid-market. And artists, a lot of artists are just feeling left out of all of this. What would you say to them?
Well, I'm glad you brought up Dance Brigade, because the city did step in, and actually thanks to an ad back from Supervisor Avalos, we were able to subsidize that increase in rent for Dance Brigade this year at a one-time grant of $15,000. So we are, you know, as a city, very fortunate with our revenues, and per capita we fund arts and culture more than any city in the United States. So it's certainly something we should be proud of. It's not to say that we don't need to look at long-term pathways to ownership. So we've been working with the Community Arts Stabilization Trust and the Northern California Community Loan Fund to help organizations like Dance Brigade find permanent homes. And we're actually working with them right now to look at acquiring a permanent space, ideally in the Mission, so they could remain in the neighborhood that they've served for so long. And, you know, we funded Dance Brigade and many other similar organizations for decades through our Cultural Equity Endowment, which just got a $1 million boost 2 years ago. So, you know, I do think the city is responding. It is a challenging market, and it's not to say that the struggle won't be going on for quite some time. And I think our next struggle is to make sure we preserve the NEA, and heading to Washington, D.C. on Monday just to fight for the NEA's funding, which is actually some of the resources we're allocating towards our affordable housing efforts. But San Francisco also receives more NEA dollars per capita than any other city in the United States, so it's going to be critical that we protect that revenue stream as well.
And so based on what you are hearing, Tom, is the Trump administration planning to get rid of NEA funding, period? Because that's what a report in the I read about in The Hill last week.
Yes. So the Heritage Foundation has long recommended the elimination of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the NEH, and the NEA. And that is what the source was around an advisor referencing that report. So while there's no definitive proposal at the moment, I would suspect that there would be proposed cuts or potential elimination. So the Western States Arts Federation is making sure that that doesn't get put on the table, and we will be in Washington, D.C. with a broad coalition of arts and culture leaders from the West Coast to go and meet with legislators from around the country to make sure that that doesn't happen.
All right. Well, Tom, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, and thanks again for this covering this issue.
Tom DeCaney is Director of Cultural Affairs for the San Francisco Arts Commission. And Sam, what are your thoughts about government officials saying that they're doing everything they can? You got a $15,000 grant here, a $20,000 grant there. What are your thoughts? What else can they do?
Well, you know, of course, you know, city officials want to be perceived as, you know, looking out for Oakland's cultural institutions. And, yeah, one of the ways they do that are these, you know, sort of gestures around doling out grants and whatnot. But, you know, what would be, I think, more persuasive to the arts community than that would be, you know, really more aggressive action around, you know, basically strengthening tenants' rights. You know, the artists that I talk to, I mean, their priorities are less that, oh, I'm not getting subsidized enough by the city for to do the work I do. They're more just around, you know, whether or not they can continue to live here. Mm. So I think that's why, in the wake of the ghost ship fire, the sort of activism and political will from the arts community is focused on, you know, a tenant protection ordinance and not a something really specifically centered or narrowly on artists. You know, it's centered on a reform to strengthen tenant protections, which I think is really telling.
Right. And I mean, again, the numbers are shocking. I mean, a 300% increase in evictions in San Mateo County over the last 3 years. And Greg, you're Senior VP of Properties for Art Space. Now, this is a national organization that works to develop affordable spaces for artists. You work in some places where the rents are very affordable, especially for people who live in the Bay Area, but you also work in places like Santa Cruz where rents are going up. And I just wanted to get your perspective when you think about a place like the Bay Area that is so expensive. And in September of last year, or 2015, the San Francisco Arts Commission surveyed 500 artists. 77% of respondents said they'd been displaced from their homes, workspaces, or both. So this is a massive crisis. Can you talk about some of the solutions that your organization embraces and what really works when you're thinking about a place like the Bay Area that is so, so expensive?
Sure. I'd be happy to. You know, one, this is not a new problem. I mean, ArtSpace was formed in 1978 by the Minneapolis Arts Commission to confront this exact problem, and we've been working on it on a national basis ever since as a nonprofit organization. But, you know, ultimately, you know, artists are low to moderate income people, and they happen to work in a specific profession. Many of them have 1-2 jobs plus their art careers, and their living needs, you know, in many cases require very specific types of space that allow them to work on their art. And we've been very successful working in communities that have high housing prices, places like Seattle. We have a building in East Harlem, New York. Santa Cruz certainly is not a cheap place to live. And in those communities, you know, government and private sector foundation communities have recognized the value of their arts community and recognize that they're a credible, legitimate sector of the affordable housing world. And they've invested resources that are either kind of meant to create affordable housing or stimulate economic development or preserve historic structures or change neighborhoods. They've invested those resources in art-related projects because they recognize the value of that community. We've seen tremendous success, whether it's in Pioneer Square, Seattle, or, you know, the Tannery Project down in Santa Cruz. We're working on a project right now in Honolulu, Hawaii, that will be probably our most expensive housing market that we've worked in yet.
Now tell us about that.
Well, I mean, Honolulu is emerging kind of with a huge housing boom, and it's very expensive to build things in Honolulu. Land is very difficult to acquire in Honolulu. Funding resources are limited in Honolulu. We've been working for 7 years, and knock on wood, we'll go under construction later this spring on an 84-unit artist live-work building, new construction, built in partnership with a local housing development partner, EAH Housing, and a local cultural organization, the Pa'i Foundation, which is a Native Hawaiian cultural organization. So we're going to have working studio spaces, we're going to have nonprofit spaces, and we're going to have artist live-work spaces. And you know, the second part of the problem we haven't really talked about yet is, you know, sustainability and stability. And, you know, in the years that ArtSpace has been doing this, we continue to and have a commitment to continue to own and operate these facilities in a way that works financially and affordably for the artists who live there and work there, but also is safe and is well maintained and is operated in a philosophy that embraces the creativity of the folks who live there.
I'm looking at this space in Honolulu, and it's beautiful. And according to your website, it'll include 84 units of affordable live workspace for low-income artists and their families.
Yeah. So housing in that building will be, you know, will range in price from $400 or $500 up to $1,000, and that's in a market where housing is probably market rate housing, probably as expensive as San Francisco or Oakland.
And the estimated project cost is $53 million. Can you tell us about the funding?
Sure. The funding, you know, is very similar to more traditional affordable rental housing that you would see in San Francisco. We have a program called the Federal Low-Income Housing Tax Credit Program that is available to generate investment equity and investment tax credits from private investors. That is about $20 million in this project. The state has a matching state low-income housing tax credit program. The state of Hawaii has a rental housing trust fund program. The city receives federal home funding from HUD, a portion of which has been allocated to this project, and the city has its own affordable housing fund program. And in addition, the state has participated with some cultural grants for the non-residential space, and we've been successful raising philanthropic dollars, about $4 million, for the project.
Greg Handberg is Senior VP of Properties for Art Space. It's a national organization that works to develop affordable spaces for artists. And you can find out more information about what they do at yourcallradio.org. They have a project in Santa Cruz, and we'll talk about that later in the show. Sam LaFave is a freelance journalist in Oakland who's written for a number of publications, including the New York Times. He's a regular contributor to the East Bay Express, and he's been writing about the Ghost Ship Warehouse fire and tragedy. 36 people lost their lives during that fire in December. And if you'd like to join us, we'd love to hear from you. This is an issue that we're going to continue covering, affordable housing for artists and people who struggle to make ends meet, and then even people who make a decent salary in the Bay Area and cannot afford housing. If you'd like to join us, what are your thoughts on this crisis, solutions? What do you think about government officials and their responses? And if you have seen any affordable housing projects in your area that have really worked, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Sam, Oakland Mayor Libby Schaaf recently announced a $1.7 million investment to make art spaces and arts organizations safe and affordable. Do you have any details about that and how that money will be spent?
I think it's a little misleading to say that, you know, that money will go towards making art spaces safe. I think that announcement was slated, you know, well before Ghost Ship, and it's really a program that's modeled on the CAST program in San Francisco. And you know, it's positive. It has the potential for possibly, you know, a couple organizations that are registered nonprofits that are 501c3s to be able to, you know, have some security in their space, but it's not exactly going to have, you know, an impact on a place like Ghost Ship, which is a unpermitted, you know, unsanctioned underground live work residence. You know, it's that program that the mayor announced is really aimed at kind of a different tier of the arts community.
There have been a number of stories in the media about people who have been evicted since Ghost Ship. You wrote in The Guardian that as a tenant in a multi-use space that's being targeted after the Ghost Ship fire, that you were seeing a wrong-headed backlash firsthand. What are you seeing out there, and are you seeing an increase in evictions of artists who live in warehouse spaces?
Yeah, definitely. And definitely, you know, a sort of spate of sort of a code enforcement crackdown. You know, you're seeing a lot of, inspectors showing up at places and, you know, seeming to be, you know, enforcing code issues kind of arbitrarily, kind of willy-nilly, you know. And it's important to note that, you know, people are afraid that they're going to get kicked out because their place isn't up to code. That's not the same as their place being unsafe. You know, I think it's important to remember that, City Hall isn't up to code, right? You know, it's safe, but, you know, it has issues.
Well, in response, activists in Oakland introduced an emergency ordinance to temporarily halt evictions of residents from commercial properties and to prevent the red tagging of buildings for violations that are not life-threatening. What is the status of that?
So I think you're referring to the Emergency Tenant Protection Ordinance, which was written by kind of a coalition of activists, including Stephen DiCaprio, who runs an organization called Land Action. And, you know, it's been considered by City Council at a few hearings at this point, most recently on Monday. And on Monday, the discussion was around whether or not the mayor's executive order, which she issued about 2 weeks ago, you know, how much alike the executive order and the emergency tenant protection ordinance is. You know, city staff seems to be suggesting that the executive order does a lot of the same things that the tenant protection ordinance does, but the people who really support the tenant protection ordinance kind of disagree. So at the last council, you know, councilperson Rebecca Kaplan basically said that she wanted to see a side-by-side comparison of the two and sort of a report back on that to see, you know, how alike they are or not.
And Greg, what are your thoughts on the evictions that are happening or just the fear that so many artists have that they'll be next? I mean, this is happening across the country.
Well, I think it's real. You know, the fear is real, and it's in some ways understandable that an understandable reaction from a building code official or a fire official that, you know, if this happened here, it could happen elsewhere. And so the crackdown is not particularly surprising. It is, you know, how do you start to mitigate kind of the impact of this? Or perhaps even more importantly, if you're an artist living and working in a building that is underground or has not been improved to code conditions, or if you own a building that has artists living or working in that kind of situation, what can you do to make the building more safe? You know, even if it's not up to code as a living space. And there are a number of things, a number of resources that are available on websites and the like, and that are very low cost, very doable things that will improve the safety of buildings, even if they are not, if they're not up to current building code.
How do cities make these decisions? There was a piece in the East Bay Times about Artworks Downtown, which is in San Francisco, and the city of San Rafael gave the nonprofit a $197,000 federal block grant to upgrade the ancient electrical system that serves the affordable housing units on the third floor of the building. And this is an 1880s opera house. There's three galleries there, 32 artist studios, 17 low-income apartments. And someone moved out recently, which hardly ever happens, and a 28-year-old photographer recently moved in. So many people were so happy that this happened, but a lot of arts organizations wanted this grant, and they decided to choose this one. But how are these decisions made, Greg?
Well, you know, if you're going to receive, you know, whether it's local, state, or federal funding to undertake an improvement to a building, you're going to be pulling a building permit. And the minute you pull a building permit to do that kind of work, you are subject to, you know, building inspector inspections. And that can turn up, you know, required improvements that are unrelated to, you know, the electrical upgrade or whatever improvement you were going about doing. And that is, in our buildings, you know, our residential buildings are inspected every year by the fire inspector and a building code official. Our commercial buildings that do not have residential are inspected very, you know, much in a much more rare way, you know, maybe every 3 or 4 years, maybe not even that. And so, you know, the building inspectors respond to complaints or to notifications, and when they respond, you know, they will write up a building for the problems that they see.
Greg Hanberg is Senior VP of Properties for ArtSpace, a national organization that works to develop affordable spaces for artists across the country. And Sam LaFave is a freelance journalist in Oakland who has written about this crisis for a number of publications. He's also a regular contributor to the East Bay Express. Today on Your Call, we are talking about the affordable housing crisis and the ghost ship fire, which happened in December in Oakland, killing 36 people, added a new urgency to this debate. So today we're talking about that debate and solutions. We'll be back after this.
This is Your Call on KALW Local Public Radio. If you have a perspective you haven't heard in today's discussion or a question that you feel needs to be answered, please join the conversation by calling us at 866-798-8255. 8255. That's 866-798-8255, toll free. You can also send an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. You may post a comment or question at the show's website, yourcallradio.org, or you may tweet us at yourcallradio. You can take KLW wherever your smartphone goes, instantly stream our signal from the KLW.org homepage, or subscribe to KLW shows as podcasts at KLW.org/subscribe.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will have a conversation with Ro Khanna, a newly elected congressman who represents California's 17th congressional district, right in the heart of Silicon Valley. Representative Khanna says that he wants a $15 minimum wage, mandatory paid sick days, a domestic workers' bill of rights. We'll also talk to him about the affordable housing crisis, because that is definitely an issue in Silicon Valley. That's tomorrow. If you have any questions you'd like us to ask Representative Khanna, you can email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Friday, it's our media roundtable, and there is a lot to talk about on Friday. Today, we are talking about the ongoing affordable housing crisis in the Bay Area. And we'd love to hear from you if you've been affected by this, if you're an artist, or what does affordable mean anymore? I mean, people who make $120,000 have a hard time making ends meet in some parts of the city, depending on if they have kids. But what are your thoughts on this crisis? So much urgency was added to the debate after the ghost ship fire in Oakland in December, which killed 36 people. So what are your city officials doing? If you have any stories you'd like to share about your personal experience, we'd love to hear from you. If you're a struggling artist, if you're fearful that an eviction is coming, I think it's so important to talk about this on an ongoing basis. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Greg Hanberg is Senior Vice President of Properties for Art Space, a national organization that works to develop affordable spaces for artists. And Sam LaFave is a freelance journalist who writes about these issues in Oakland. And Sam, before we let you go, how are artists organizing around these issues? What would you say is the most effective action people can take, especially when it comes to raising their voices at community hearings or city hall hearings?
Well, yeah, I mean, like the you know, tenant protection ordinance that I mentioned is being sort of supported by this upstart activist group called the Oakland Warehouse Coalition, and they've been very present at city council meetings, and they've been very adamant about bringing people out to you know, meetings like that, who, as far as I can tell, a lot of people who've never been, honestly. And there's other groups that are more focused on kind of meeting people's immediate needs in the wake of the fire. So for instance, sort of like Greg was saying, that means you know, providing resources for other art spaces, live work spaces, as far as making safety improvements, as far as preparing for inspections that are imminent, and that's all happening sort of quietly. You're not hearing about that as much because, you know, for pretty obvious reasons, but, you know, I think that just kind of illustrates this, the fact that, you know, the people in the warehouse community, the arts community, whatever you want to call it, the underground, you know, music and arts community, are, you know, took safety seriously before. I think everyone's told me Ghost Ship was an outlier in that regard. And, you know, in the wake of the fire, like, people are really adamant about, you know, making sure all their peers have the smoke detector in every room like they're supposed to have, and the, you know, fire extinguisher every 75 feet like they're supposed to have. You know, I can't tell you how many people I've met who seem to turn into, you know, code experts overnight, you know.
And also, Sam, you know, we talk a lot about policy, about numbers, and I think it's important to also just talk about the emotional side of all this, because This is a personal issue for me. My landlord tried to kick me out a couple years ago, and it is so incredibly stressful. I mean, if you don't have the money to hire a lawyer to figure out what your rights are, you're just living in fear. It takes over your entire life. And I mentioned this San Francisco Arts Commission survey that came out in September of 2015. And 77% of San Francisco artists, 500 artists, said they've been displaced. Oakland also conducted a survey of about 900 artists. The majority said workspace and housing costs present the biggest challenge to being an artist in Oakland. So can you also talk about just, you know, a lot of people are, because of what's going on at the national level, people are just really emotionally stressed out, and this just adds to it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, even just putting aside the fact that, you know, we're talking about 36 people died, and that's having, you know, ramifications as far as grief just throughout the entire city. I mean, just putting that aside, you know, you're absolutely right that the, you know, exacerbating that sense of precarity and insecurity for, you know, artists and the spaces where they work and where they live, I mean, it, you know, it's heavy, and I think you know, eventually it'll begin to have some sort of chilling effect, you know, and it probably impacts people's ability to, you know, work and express themselves and, you know, feel like they live in a hospitable environment to, you know, do what they want to do.
Yeah, and it's so difficult to go to bed at night and wonder if there's going to be an eviction notice on your door the next day.
Yeah, people have told me that, you know, that exact same thing. It begins to feel like, you know, you're not at home when you're at home, that you're on sort of borrowed time.
Sam, if there was one change you would like to see from city officials in Oakland, what would it be?
If there's one change I'd like to see?
Or a policy to implement,
yeah.
What would it be?
Well, I think one of the really effective features of the tenant protection ordinance that's being considered that, you know, I think would be positive to see adopted in some form or another is just formally extending just cause protections, you know, the eviction protections that a lot of Oaklanders already have, formally extending those to people who live in, you know, what we can call unpermitted residences, which would include, you know, I'm not just talking about warehouses or art spaces or whatever, but in-laws, garages, you know, illegal additions, and so on and so forth, because, you know, all kinds of people live in spaces like that, and as is, you know, they don't have any protections against, you know, being arbitrarily kind of kicked out for no particular reason, and, you know, those are some of the most at-risk, vulnerable residents in Oakland, you know, and sometimes those unpermitted residences are kind of the last step before the street.
Well, Sam, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Rose.
Sam LaFave is a freelance journalist in Oakland who has written about these issues for The Guardian, The New York Times. He's also a regular contributor to the East Bay Express. Today on Your Call, we are talking about the affordable housing crisis and the ghost ship fire that happened in Oakland in December. 36 people were killed, and that really added a new urgency to this ongoing debate here in the Bay Area and also across the country. And sticking with us for the rest of the hour is Greg Hanberg, Senior VP of Property for Art Space, a national organization that works to develop affordable spaces for artists. And now I would like to welcome Sam Tepperman Gelfand to the show. Sam is deputy managing attorney at Public Advocates, a statewide civil rights organization in San Francisco. And Sam worked on a partnership between Facebook and community groups that will allocate $20 million of corporate funding to affordable housing and job training in East Palo Alto and surrounding communities. Hi, Sam. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Nice to have you. Sam, it was shocking to read in the Mercury News last month that the number of no-cause evictions in San Mateo County rose 300% over a three-year period. San Mateo does not have rent control. It was on the ballot in November, but it was defeated. Can you talk about what people in San Mateo are facing and how they're dealing with this?
Yeah, we work with a lot of community groups in San Mateo County and throughout the Bay Area. And, you know, in addition to no-fault evictions, people are facing $1,000 rent increases overnight and harassment by landlords and basically every trick in the book to try to get out low-income people, people of color, so that those buildings can be basically flipped to serve a different income segment and often people of different races. So it's a huge problem, not just in San Francisco and Oakland, which I think have experienced this for many, many years, but really in every corner of the Bay Area.
And can you talk about why this rent control measure was defeated in San Mateo County? What were the forces behind it?
Well, I think that the investment of the apartment association to fight and spread misinformation about rent control was a huge contributing factor. I should also point out that in Mountain View, rent control did pass. Mm. So I think that there were some successes and that we are basically seeing a region-wide and statewide surge of tenant organizing and anti-displacement organizing that is fighting back against landlord interests and private for-profit developer interests that really, in most cities, write their own ticket to what policies they want.
And you worked on a project to get Facebook to commit $20 million toward affordable housing in San Mateo. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that just to set the context, you know, affordable housing construction takes a substantial investment both from the public and private sector. Between 2009 and 2015, two-thirds of the state and federal funding to build new affordable housing was cut, and that has not been replaced at the state level and is only going down at the federal level also. Mm. So I think we are needing to turn both to state government and local government to invest in affordable housing construction, but also to the private sector. Much of the pressure on the housing market is driven by the extreme growth in high-wage jobs, largely in the tech sector and supporting industries. And so it's time for those companies to step up and invest in the housing needs of people around them. Facebook, I think, has really been a leader in that, in sitting down in a deep dialogue with low-income community members from East Palo Alto to figure out what the local housing needs are, and then to enter into a really groundbreaking partnership between the company and the community to both figure out the housing issues and also work together on solutions.
And how will that $20 million be used?
It will be used to build and preserve affordable housing for very low and extremely low-income people and families within 15 miles of the Facebook campus. So it's the idea is that it will speak to the local community needs and allow people who have lived there with their families for generations to stay in the area, allow low-wage workers in the tech sector or otherwise to move into that area and be closer to their jobs.
You brought up funding in California, and yesterday Governor Jerry Brown gave the state of the state, and at his news conference, he talked about affordable housing and said, we've got to bring down the cost structure of housing and not just find ways to subsidize it. According to the LA Times, he proposed no new funding for low-income housing subsidies in the budget and said he would not support any housing legislation that would increase budgetary spending. He's citing lower state revenues and uncertainty surrounding federal dollars. He axed $400 million he agreed to spend on low-income housing subsidies last year if lawmakers signed off on his plan to streamline local development regulations. So, I mean, the headline is, California governor, we're not spending more on low-income housing because it's too expensive to build. How is this going to affect people?
Well, I think it will be a disaster for low-income families, and it has been a disaster. The state in 2012 cut off a funding source that was investing $1 billion a year in the construction of affordable housing for lower-income families, and I think we need to face the reality that for a large section of the lower-income population in the Bay Area and statewide, for-profit market-driven housing is not going to give them a solution. And so simply streamlining luxury development is doing nothing to meet the needs of the people who are struggling the most. So I think that we need to send a really strong message to Governor Brown and to our other elected officials in Sacramento that money has to be on the table to meet this urgent need, that simply turning to unfettered market forces is not a good solution to meet the needs of low-income people.
Greg Hanberg, what are your thoughts on that?
I agree completely. There's absolutely no way that controlling development costs is going to create housing that is affordable to even moderate-income people in the state of California. You know, our project in Santa Cruz, the housing component, was completed in 2009, a time when the state had significant resources to help create affordable housing, and redevelopment existed at a local level. And both of those things, that picture's changed completely. And I think it's going to be very difficult to see any significant new production of affordable rental housing given the current funding situation in California.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit more about that? I mean, given the funding situation, what would you say to advocates and organizations that work on these issues in California? I mean, it's hard even these days to find a place to live in Santa Rosa, Petaluma. I mean, this is where I grew up, and I cannot believe how much the rents have increased there. And this is just to give you, I know you're not here, Greg, in California, you're in Minneapolis, but this is about 45 miles north of the Golden Gate Bridge. And these are places that people would move from San Francisco or Marin because it was affordable in Sonoma County. And that's just no longer the case.
Right. Right. You know, from an arts community perspective, you know, what happens is the artists leave, you know, and it, you know, that, and that's, you know, because they need space to do their work. And the more general low-income population that needs housing, you know, they can't afford to, you know, they can't really do that. Maybe they're, you know, they're perhaps more location-bound. It's a huge challenge. I mean, it takes dollars to create new affordable housing. And you're either, you know, what we see when dollars don't exist is we see the creation of substandard housing sometimes, or housing in locations where it's less expensive to build, but that doesn't address, you know, the needs in places like San Francisco or Oakland, where affordable housing is desperately needed.
And Sam, what is the best thing people can do to raise their voices on the budget? We've been doing shows this week about resisting. The Women's March that took place on Saturday was massive. People are showing up in front of politicians' offices telling them to vote no on Donald Trump's nominees. So many people want to get involved here. And, you know, a lot of people don't talk about the budget, but it is such an important document to read about and to understand. I mean, the prison budget in the state of California is massive. And yet we just learned that Jerry Brown says no more funding for affordable housing because he says it's too expensive. So how can people raise their voices on the budget?
I think it's critical to contact the governor's office directly, and also to contact the state-level elected officials that represent you. Get to know them. They're often very accessible, and they want to hear what their voters have to say. And we need to make sure that the high-level rhetoric in California about protecting Californians against the federal threats and against the challenges that we're all facing are not just rhetoric, but actually are implemented in policy. So write to your elected officials, call their offices, visit their offices that in the local district where you live, and tell them what your most pressing needs are. I think that it's at that state level that you can really get responsiveness and also a scale of investment and policy change that can really make a huge difference.
Sam, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Sam Tepperman-Gelfand is Deputy Managing Attorney at Public Advocates, a statewide civil rights organization in San Francisco. And the budget in California, $96 billion. And Jerry Brown said no new money for affordable housing because it's too expensive. Now, a lot of these issues are not set in stone. So as Sam said, it's really important to call your senator and your assembly member to let them know that you want maybe more funding allocated to affordable housing. And you can find information about that budget online. And Greg Hanberg is Senior VP of Properties for ArtSpace, a national organization that works to develop affordable spaces for artists. Greg, we want to be realistic about what we're facing right now in the state of California. You know, anytime we do a show about affordable housing, our guests also talk about how HUD has been completely eviscerated since the 70s, and under a Trump administration, you can assume that it's probably not going to get more funding. So given this reality here in California, what would you say? I mean, what are some solutions to this?
Well, you know, I tell you, HUD, you know, in my world, which is creating new affordable rental housing, it happens to be for artists, you know, HUD funding honestly isn't a huge part of that.
Hmm.
HUD has a program called the Home Program, which provides, you know, a loan, a relatively small loan, in the, you know, maybe it's 3%, maybe it's 5% of a project's budget. It's not the key piece. The key federal piece is the Low Income Housing Tax Credit Program, and that program, I haven't heard the new administration talk about. It is a program that, you know, emerged from the 86 Tax Reform Act, which is a Ronald Reagan-led piece of legislation, and it's had strong bipartisan support. So the federal Low Income Housing Tax Credit Program, as long as that stays, I think we've got good federal support for creating new affordable housing, rental housing. You know, I think, you know, the challenge in California really is at the state level, but also perhaps at the local level. And, you know, the most effective piece of funding that I've seen around the country to help create new affordable rental housing is in the city of Seattle. And it's a city program called the Housing Levy Program. And, you know, the city population voted by referendum that it wanted to provide budget support for the creation of new affordable housing. And it's a tremendously valuable resource that's helping get it done in the city of Seattle. And so it can happen at a local level, not just a state level.
And where did the money for that one come from in Seattle?
You know, I believe it is. I believe that it is a sales tax levy. It's called the Housing Levy Program, and so it's either a real estate tax levy, which I know, you know, you have your challenges in California on that.
Yeah, major.
Or a sales tax levy. One of the two. But, you know, given whatever constraints, you know, the state of Washington has or the city of Seattle has, they found a way to dedicate dollars to the creation of new affordable housing because they recognize the value of that to the community. And that's what's going to happen in California, in San Francisco.
Let's take a call before we end our show. Let's go to Felicia in San Francisco. Hi, Felicia. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I would like to say that I think the emphasis on new housing is misplaced because it's very much more expensive and it's also not rent controlled, whereas there's a lot of space that could be rehabbed for probably a quarter of the price and help that many more people. And so I would really like to see people get behind rehabbing rather than building new affordable housing.
Yeah, what about that, Greg? There are some organizations in the Bay Area, and I'm sure up and down the state of California, that focus on rehabbing old buildings.
You know, I agree completely. I think when I talk about creating new housing, I'm talking about, you know, either creating new construction, new housing units, or I'm talking about improving or adapting existing buildings to create new housing or improved quality housing, code-compliant housing. You know, the question about rent control, you know, when federal dollars, be they tax credits or federal home dollars, or if they're local resources, those typically do come with long-term commitments to affordability. And so we're not talking about, you know, creating housing with subsidy that is then lost to market pressure.
What about other solutions that don't require the building of new housing? Because it is so expensive in the Bay Area.
Oh, right. You know, I think that there is existing housing that is probably at threat because it's not in good condition. And so it's a threat, just attriting out of the housing stock because it's in poor condition. And investing in the improvement of that existing housing, I think, is important. Investing, perhaps, in stabilizing ownership of existing housing so that it can remain affordable for low-income populations rather than flipping or, you know, changing to higher-rent housing is also a viable strategy.
And what else are your thoughts, Greg? Here in the Bay Area, we've got, you know, we have government officials coming on saying that they're doing as much as they can. We just got an email from a listener who said that the Oakland mayor, Libby Schaaf, issued an executive order recently improving the safety of non-permitted spaces while avoiding displacement. And this executive order was implemented to address the need to improve the safety of former warehouse and industrial buildings that have been converted to non-permitted use while avoiding displacement of vulnerable communities, particularly in face of the affordability crisis.
Well, you know, when I hear people say that they're doing all that they can, you know, the question that becomes, well, is it enough?
Right.
You know, and the measure of that is in results.
Right.
And so, you know, if you're doing all you can and you still have a housing crisis on your hands, then you're not doing all you need to do. And, you know, I think that Sam previously, you know, this is not going to solve itself. You know, this is not, the market is not going to solve this problem. There needs to be, you know, policy change or capital funding change or real action to help address the affordable housing crisis that, that you're facing.
Well, I mean, we have a Democratic, the Democrats control Sacramento. At this point, there's a supermajority. They don't need one Republican vote to raise taxes or to pass legislation. And yet, yesterday, Jerry Brown just said no more affordable housing because it's too expensive.
Yeah, I don't know what to say about that. I don't know how to respond to that.
You know, any other things that you've learned from perhaps the Tannery Project in Santa Cruz that would be helpful to people working on these issues?
You know, what I learned in the Tannery Project was led by a coalition of folks who had kind of varied but complementary objectives. I mean, that project was about affordable housing, certainly. It was about, you know, saving their creative community that was a threat of leaving, given affordability considerations. It was about an old brownfield contaminated site that needed to be repurposed. It was about, you know, a lot of things, and what Santa Cruz did right was that they assembled all of the stakeholders representing all of those different interests, built support for the tannery, and then marched forward together. And that's what it takes to overcome a problem, you know, an objective, or to accomplish an objective like this.
How many people live there?
You know, we have 100 low-income dwelling units for artists and their families, and I bet that, I think the number I last saw was 348 kind of folks live there.
Well, what is the average rent?
Oh, well, we have ones, efficiencies, ones, twos, and threes. I think the rents top out at about $1,300.
They top out at $1,300. Wow. It's so hard to find even a studio these days in the Bay Area for that.
When we were working on this project in the mid-2000s, folks were renting garages for $1,800, you know, in Santa Cruz. Mm. You know, to live it. I mean, it's a very, and that was in 2006. You know, it's Santa Cruz is also a very expensive place to live.
Greg Hanberg is Senior VP of Properties for Art Space, a national organization that works to develop affordable spaces for artists. Greg, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And again, it's so important to read about California's budget. It just came out. Now is the time to raise your voice. If you don't like what you see, if you want more money allocated to public transportation, for example, or to affordable housing, again, Jerry Brown says because it's so expensive, no money for affordable housing. So we'll continue following this very important issue. Your Call is produced here at KALW. Laura Flynn produced today's show. Helena Murphy and Stephanie Porcel are our volunteers. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. Kevin Vance is our studio engineer. If you have any feedback for us or a show or a guest idea, email feedback@yourcallradio.org. I'm Rose Aguilar. Thanks for joining us.